Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. Today, Sean and I are joined by the wonderful Jackie Stewart. Jackie is an accredited independent counsellor who has specialised in fertility counselling for the past 15 years. Jackie's vast experience and expertise allows her to support individuals and couples as they navigate their own fertility journeys. Jackie has worked with Bourne Hall since 2008 and the Cambridge IVF Clinic since 2011, as well as running her own private practice. She also supported Sean and I as we went through our own fertility journeys and allowed us and supported us to process our emotions and thoughts. So without further ado, welcome Jackie. Thank you so much for coming on to the Male Fertility Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on and I'm really looking forward to the discussion because personally it's been something I've experienced. But first of all, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm really, really, really privileged to be invited on. I'm very grateful to be here. I hope that whatever I can share will be supportive in some way. And it's just great to talk to you both.
All right. There's no doubt, Jackie. You were our implications counsellor when we were going through it at Bourne. And you were amazing. You helped us so much. And thank you for coming here because I know that this episode will help so many others as well.
That's very kind of you. I appreciate that, Sean. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
So, obviously, we're going to talk about miscarriage today. It's something that really affected me. We had two miscarriages during our fertility journey, me and my wife, Jen. And it was something I found very, very difficult to process. And it was almost after the whole experience, in terms of my whole fertility journey, that it hit me. The fact that we had had two miscarriages and that we'd potentially lost two babies that could have been with us there and then. So that's why it was so important for me to obviously to get you on, Jackie, to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to say I'm so sorry for your losses. They stay with you, always will be a part of you, won't they? And I'm just so sorry. I mean, any miscarriage is absolutely traumatic, really. And miscarriages after infertility or fertility treatment, There's something really, really difficult and challenging about that, isn't there? Yeah. Because you kind of wait so long or, you know, and think it might never happen again, that experience. So those losses are much grieved over. It's the managing of them and not knowing how to manage them at the time, isn't it? Because you're just not prepared, really.
Yeah, I mean, our first miscarriage happened at nine weeks.
Yeah, that's a long way in.
9 weeks. And it was during our second cycle. I have to think about it because it does all blend into one. Like when you've had so many, it kind of really does blend in. And then our second miscarriage is, we've talked about it before on the show, it's a bit of a bittersweet thing because it was actually the pregnancy that my son came from. So we originally had twins.
Oh, wow.
And we, all the way through, we had really early scans and everything was fine until we went to the 12-week scan. Baby was still there. You know, I still call them a baby, even though little tiny things. But there was no heartbeat. But Seb was still there. So... so many emotions kind of rush over you, like, well, we've lost one, we don't want to lose another one. But at the same time, I distinctly remember being really sad that I'd lost a baby, but at the same time being really joyful that I still had one. You know, so my experiences are very different. We had one where we just lost everything and another one where we lost, but we still had. That was an interesting one to process. And we talked to my son, Sebastian, about his twin quite a lot because he was quite interested because obviously the early scan photos that we have, there was two. He's like, what's this, Daddy? I'm explaining it. So yeah, it was a really different types of experience for me. But as you said, it's something I don't think I'll ever truly get over. I just learned to live with that little feeling I have in my heart, in my soul, you know, that bit of sadness.
That's right.
But some people I've spoken to recently, moving on from that is so, so difficult. But even the fear of trying another cycle is too great because they don't want to lose again, you know.
Yeah, I think there's so many feelings. So sorry, Kieran, there's so many feelings. I mean, especially in the second miscarriage that you had. But those mixed feelings are incredibly hard, isn't it? You're sort of so joyful about one pregnancy, but how do you balance that out with the huge sadness that you feel of the loss of the other, of the other embryo, the twin? And, you know, sort of, and I think, again, on the back of the first miscarriage and very sad and tragic loss that you had, the anxiety that comes up with trying to, you know, the fear of miscarrying again or losing the, you know, little Sebi, for example, is so difficult, isn't it? You want to be excited, but you can't. You've got the sadness. It's a rush of different emotions. And I think trying to work with those emotions day to day and carrying on normally when nothing feels quite normal is extremely hard. And I think the other point that you were making was about people being fearful really of going back into treatment or getting pregnant again. And so that's incredibly difficult after a loss because you have that in your mind. And how soon do you go back in, and when will you ever be ready, and how do you prepare yourself for that? You know, is it understandable and acceptable to just know that anxiety will be present? It is okay to know that, you know, you're going to go through treatment, but you're also going to have anxiety. And how can staff or nurses or, you know, work with you with that anxiety? Because they're aware of that if you've suffered a loss. You know, can you work with the anxiety or have reassurance scans or have, you know, sort of your hand held a little bit more as you go through the system? But of course, you know, we're talking about men here as well, and I really want to focus on the man, the side of it that I've come on to speak about with you.
Mm. That's such a, yeah, exactly, and that's exactly why this topic was so important. Obviously, Kieran has the personal experience, but then it's the male element, and you know, I feel very fortunate that I didn't experience this, but I was so scared of it because I was just in this perpetual state of fear throughout the fertility treatment, because it seemed to be one knock after another, one bit of bad news, one more bit of life changing, like diagnosis or result. And then when we got to our pregnancy, I think I must have talked about it on our first episode, because our first couple of episodes where we just go into detail about our story. I'm sure I would have covered it on that, but I didn't really enjoy it. I was so anxious for that whole time. Because I guess I was in this learned state of fear through those years. And so, yeah, it was, you know, a really troubling time for me. And thankfully we got through it. But I think one of the big issues that comes with this from the male element, and certainly like I've spoken to Kieran about this, I've spoken to other friends who have been, like, for example, haven't necessarily been for infertility, but have unfortunately suffered miscarriages, and they've all said the same. No one asks how they're doing. Everyone says, you know, some people don't know what to say, but more often than not, they say, how's your missus doing?
Yes.
And that's the problem. So do you get many men come to you to speak about this?
Well, I think that is a big problem. But both the fact that no, not many men come forward, and also that it's common that people will ask after the female partner, which is sad. But it's like miscarriages happen to women. Mm-hmm. Did you see? But baby loss happens to both of you. So, I think it would be wonderful to see more men coming forward to talk about their feelings. Obviously, people come forward in couples sometimes, but it is really difficult to counter the kind of stigma around men needing to be strong still, or, you know, what counselling means. Is it mental health? You know, trying to get past those stigmas, or men, yeah, needing to be a certain way, stoic, or, you know, and just purely there to see how the partner is getting on, and then they forget themselves. Yeah. But you can't sustain that, actually, not because you're grieving yourself, but also because the whole experience of loss, and then maybe continued fertility treatment, and the fear of loss is too much, really. The capacity to try to cope with all of those emotions is too hard, you know. So, yeah.
You know, I distinctly remember thinking that when we found out that the twin had died, even my attention went straight to Jen. Well, inside, I still remember that horrible sinking feeling. And it was one of the nurses that put her hand on my shoulder and was like, "You're right." And it was the first time that anyone ever kind of recognized me in the process. And it took something like that. And they were lovely. They were amazing. They're like, I can't fault the care we had there. But it's a real thing. Like, men really do have these emotions, and we might mask them, and we might sit there put a brave face on, as they call it, don't they? And you put it on because, you know, you want to be seen as supporting your wife, but actually, or your partner, but it's all right, especially in those situations. We talked about it before, about taking the knee and saying, "Look, I need some support here."
Yes,
as well,
absolutely.
Because otherwise your bottle fills up. It just fills and fills and fills. And we were talking before we came on air, Jackie, about how I came to see you. And my bottle was full when I got to you, and it was flowing everywhere, and I hadn't dealt with it. So if you can deal with it earlier enough, you know, those raw emotions, they still hurt, but they don't get out of control. So it's really important for men to kind of put their hand up and say, "I'm struggling with this," especially with something so important as miscarriage. You know, it's tragic. It is traumatizing. And you don't always recognize that straight away. You know, it takes a bit of time.
And I think there is a conditioning around all of this, isn't it? About how, you know, especially in heterosexual couples, how men should be, or, you know, the stiff upper lip and, you know, lean on me, when in actual fact, you know, you're talking about your potential child, or the dream to be a family, to complete your family. And when that happens, it's happening to both of you equally. And I think the hardest thing is, because it's happening physically to the woman, the emphasis is naturally all on the woman. But even I think speaking, I think just speaking obviously purely for myself as well, I think it's important to recognise that that men's feelings are as important, and often can be swept under the carpet by themselves, or suppressed. And by others, not deliberately, but just because, you know. And so they're bound to surface later. That's the thing. They can surface later.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that you just keep on keeping on. That's the problem. And if talking about it helps just a little bit, then it takes, as you say, that bottle, it just takes the amount in the bottle down enough for you to sort of just gather your strength, or to breathe a little bit easier. And to think, okay, you know, what do I need? What do I need to help me feel a little bit more peaceful day to day?
It is a day to day thing, I found.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
know, it
very
really
much
is.
So.
And those anxiety emotions that you spoke about earlier, some days they would be good, some days they would be bad. Like I found that every day was different.
Yeah.
But talking definitely helped. I mean, we banged on about talking so much. People who are listening to this podcast, I hope, have got the message that they need to talk. It is the first step, but it's also the hardest.
Well, I wanted to acknowledge, you know, you're saying talking about talking, because I think reaching out, it takes a lot of courage. It's very brave to reach out. But the second part of that is talking to an objective outsider can help. But there is, it's unconditional. There's no judgment there. There is not a person the other side that you're talking to who's trying to fix it or make you feel better or feel like worried about how they're going to respond. So, and have professional training, you know, in it's a specialist area, really, isn't it? There are specialist organisations around miscarriage. I need to say that very, you know, very quickly, because they absolutely specialise in miscarriage and looking after both parties. So the Miscarriage Association and Petals and Tommy's, you know, wrap a lot of support. There's a lot of support out there. If you're seeing somebody like me, like a fertility counsellor, then of course there's an understanding about not only are you trying to deal with the trauma and the grief of miscarriage and loss, but you're also trying to work out how you even pick yourself up and continue.
Yeah.
With more fertility treatment, if any, you know, so.
Well, obviously we've highlighted that, as in men don't really come forward and talk about this topic, you know, miscarriage or fertility difficulties in general. In terms of miscarriage, what do you think are the barriers stopping men coming forward? Those are internal barriers, because there will be, I hope there's people listening to this in terms of listening to this because they're struggling with their miscarriage and they're looking for that guidance, and that's what we're here for. Well, what might they be thinking, or what might be internally stopping them?
I think fear. I think there's a lot of fear around just the idea of speaking to a complete stranger, you know. How would that help? There's a lot of feelings of guilt sometimes involved, and that coming out. If they come on their own, you can have individual joint counselling, clearly. It could help to come on with your partner. It could help to come on individually. It doesn't matter. There's no set requirement. I think if people perceive it as just their feelings being supported, it could go a long way to helping people get past the stigma of it and the mental health side of it. It's just a place to just download, to try to process and to be supported, whether it's with a counsellor or whether it's with a supportive organisation, a support group. So other people that can empathise with you. It could be a closed Facebook group, you know, so that you remain anonymous, but you can get your feelings out there. But it's. I think the barriers would be fear of breaking down, fear of like if you start talking about it, there's an outpouring, and then you might not be able, like you've opened a can of worms, and then all of a sudden you can't cope at all. You're a mess, a complete blubbering mess, or something. You know, some people feel, you know. Not everyone will want to talk, and I think that has to also be accepted. If people are unwilling to talk about it, then that's completely different. If you're unwilling to talk about it, obviously, in order for counselling to work, you need to be willing, of course. You know, you need to be willing to talk to someone and be brave and to just open up a little bit. So it might not be for everyone, in which case there are other ways that people can be supported. Whether it's through family, friends, work, you know, there's other ways.
I feel like something that was coming up for me then is that men need to feel validated and to be known that if they do start talking, or we say like talking is the first step. Often the first step is just attending something, whether it's a session as a couple or like the online support groups, for example. Yeah. And that can be so big, just listening to others and knowing that you're not alone, and that if those other, hopefully men, are sharing their experiences, like, for example, in a support group, then it's that validation. It's, it's not just me, and it is okay to feel like this. And like, especially in terms of miscarriage, it's not just something that my partner is experiencing. It is both of us.
That's so true. It's happening to me as well. You know, this is my feelings. You know, I'm allowed to grieve. And how do we even, you know, how do I even start to grieve? Because by the time you realize that it's, you know, that this, you know, you may sort of shed tears and cry and sob at the beginning, but then you kind of push it down maybe and try to carry on a life normally when nothing feels normal. So it's, that's the truth of it, is how do you function? How do you come on? How do you take that first step? And even if you sat on a support group, for instance, and just stayed quiet and just listened to the stories, that would be respected too, just to say, wow, I'm silent here. But actually, it's really good to know that other men are talking and I can listen. I can listen in and feel, yeah, this is okay for me to talk. You know?
Do you feel that it's often difficult for men to even acknowledge or accept the fact that they're struggling?
Yes, I think that's a big barrier. It is, that acceptance that I can't fix this. There is a problem. I don't like to see my partner struggle. If I'm struggling, how is that going to help? So to begin with, it's a big problem, isn't it? It's accepting that you really are struggling, because you're supposed to be there for your partner. But the actual fact is, if you keep trying to be a rock for your partner, what happens to you? You know? And actually, I think, I don't know, I can't speak for most women. I can just say my experience, especially speaking to many couples, most women would like their partners to talk more openly, you know, and know how best you can support each other, because obviously it's happening to both of you.
Kieran and I have talked about that previously, where we've had our moments where we leaned heavily on our wives and we needed that. Like, it was like a crutch to get you through that time. And then hopefully then you can start to move on at other points. Because like you said, you know, you're trying to be that rock, but that rock will crumble.
If you're not getting
that release. It's really hard. And again, we had our wives on in the last series, and they were talking about kind of knowing what we needed to do, but we couldn't see it or wouldn't hear it in the fact that we needed to acknowledge that we were struggling. And that's such a key part. And again, we talk about first steps. That's probably a step even before that again.
Yeah. So what would you say is the one word that stopped you or you felt that you couldn't? What would both of you say now was the one feeling or word that stopped you being able to? What was your barrier?
Ego.
Oh, thank you. Because I actually was going to say pride earlier, but it didn't come out, so forgive me. Kieran? Yeah.
Judgment.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good.
I was scared of being judged. Mm. But what I found was, when I came to speak to you, you've already mentioned it, like, you had no connection to me. I remember the first session I came, and I sat there and I didn't say much at all. It must have been like the most awkward thing ever. But there were a few sessions down the line, I opened up and I had those tears and I had that really outpour of emotions and left that room feeling better. What I was scared of didn't exist, I realized. Uh-huh. No one was going to judge me, not in that room. And if someone did judge me, what I've learned now is it tells me more about them than it does about me. So,
thank you for that.
Judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's important, isn't it? If I start with a judgment first, Kieran, you were building up trust, actually. Did you have a safe space to talk? You know, it's even an unconscious thing, really, isn't it? Just sitting there, you were present. But being present is supportive, you see. It's very supportive of yourself and your partner, just being present. And then it's just the trust starts to come. If you don't feel safe or you don't connect with a person, go and see, find a different counsellor. It's simple.
I think it's even more for men. I think men really, like, we won't open up unless we are in that safe environment.
And maybe some men need a male counsellor. I mean, there's, you know, that's important to say as well, isn't it? Maybe they would prefer to open up to a male counsellor. Maybe that's not always the case, but it's important to throw that in there too, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that was a discussion me and Jen had. Mm. She was like, would you prefer a male counsellor? And personally, I was like, don't really care. I didn't know what to expect from the experience. You know, I didn't know if it was going to help. I didn't know if it, you know, if male, female cancer would make any difference. It, for me, it was kind of like I was looking for a buoyancy aid, you know, something to keep my head up, help me empty my bottle, however you want to look at it. I was just looking for something, and I was really fortunate to find it, you know. And any guy that's listening to this, that's questioning it, just give it a go. You know,
yes, you've got nothing to lose.
Got nothing.
Yeah,
nothing
that's exactly what came to my mind. Was you have nothing to lose.
No, just give it a try. Because if talking makes it a little bit less, then it just gives you, like you say, the head above the water comes above the water, rather than you feel like you're drowning. You know, and you just don't know where to turn. It's just talk to someone. You know, reach out. Sean, you said about ego. I think pride and ego is a big thing that is a big blocker, really, to reaching out. And it's a shame, really. It's a shame that stops people. And I would just say, just put it down. Just park it. Park your ego. Park it.
I think there's a lot to it, and a lot why my ego got to that point where it felt that it would have taken such a big hit. Because and a lot of that was my friendship group and what we were kind of, who we were being in front of each other. However, interestingly, once I then firstly started opening up and spoke to yourself and then eventually started telling my friends, like, you know, my really old friends, the response I got from them was just phenomenal. And now, I'm not saying that I was the catalyst for this, but I think I was the first who shared something in our group. But we now have so much of a mature relationship together, because everyone shares, like when we all talk, and everyone's got something. And actually those barriers that we probably all subconsciously had put in place.
Yes, that's
right. They were just taken down brick by brick and actually realised that we're all human, we've all got something going on, and it doesn't make us any less of a man.
No, so that was a really important thing. Yeah.
It was a huge lesson for me.
Yes, and again, incredibly brave to open up. Like, it really was, wasn't it? In front of your peers. Took a chance.
Yeah, yeah. It got to the point where I was just like, I had to tell them, because we had started our fertility treatment with donor sperm.
Yes.
And it was, you know, it was a bit of self-preservation there as well, because I didn't want those questions and comments about resemblance, like, as and when we got there with the children. So, but of course, that they deserve to know. And I've said it before, I was robbing them of that right, that opportunity to be the friends that actually were always going to be. And it was a leap of faith, but the way they handled that, it was brilliant. And that was one of those things where that ego just goes away and you realize what nonsense it is when you're trying to, I was essentially trying to be someone I wasn't, because that wasn't me.
It's a facade, isn't it? And it's a myth, but that's what ego is, really. It's like an illusion, isn't it, that you have to kind of get through, and then it all sort of dissipates and you think, why was I so worried about, you know, all of that? But so of course when you start to feel more peaceful, then you felt stronger, and then you felt that you could open up and take a chance. I'm just so glad that, you know, everyone responded so well and as they should, supportively, you know.
Yeah, exactly. They repaid their faith in that leap, like that leap that I took, and it just validated why they had been in my life for so long and still are. But yeah, it's like you said, that ego is an imaginary thing. We
it is,
and that starts from very young, and that's peer groups, it's society, it's social media now, which wasn't there when I was growing up, certainly, but it's all telling you what you should be.
And yes, that voice in your head, you should do this, you should do that. And actually, it's kind of grabbing that sort of that thought pattern, isn't it? Grabbing hold of it. You know, as soon as you hear the word should, you're judging yourself, or you'll think others are judging you. And it's all interpretation. It's not fact. But we get caught up in the illusion of it all, don't we, of our thoughts.
We want to tell you about Impril, the unique supplement for conception, which is recommended by fertility specialists for both men and women. We know that good nutrition is really important for fertility, But we are also aware that it is practically impossible to maintain a diet that is perfectly balanced, especially for conception. Choosing the right supplement can be confusing. Many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants, which can actually damage sperm quality. Imprill is made from activated micronutrients that help every cell within the human body, from the biggest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These micronutrients have been clinically proven to significantly improve live birth rates for men and women who have previously been struggling to get pregnant. You can find out more and hear from couples who have used Imprill by visiting fertilityfamily.co.uk. If you decide this is for you, there's a 10% discount just for our listeners. So make a note of the code MF10. That's MF10.
I think ego is an amazing discussion on its own. It's a whole different chapter, isn't it? Especially when it comes to men.
I totally agree.
What I realised was, and it's only now that I've been through it all and kind of processed everything, my ego was kind of covering up for my lack of confidence.
Okay.
That's all it was, self-confidence in myself. Where now I think I have enough confidence to keep the ego in check. Do you know what I mean? I'm not too proud to put my hand up and say, look, this is going on at the moment. Where you go back 10 years, the ego that was worried about my confidence wouldn't let me do that, you know? So I think what I'm trying to say is, as guys go through this, they change. Their relationship with themselves changes. I think you do grow in confidence if you go through the process correctly and allow yourself time. And that ego won't be such a problem, you know, but it takes time. It really does. It took me, nearly 10 years, 12 years, something like that.
Nobody's counting, but you know, it's very complex, really, isn't it, the ego? And I think it's there in a way, it's trying to protect us, or it gives us that feeling that it's protecting us, but it does protect us for some time, and then it gets to a point where actually it's not working anymore and the pain becomes too much, and it's at that point where you think, actually, am I just willing to put my ego down and just push through this and try to seek a little bit more support? Because I think as that fear builds and the pain starts to build, you have less capacity to manage the day to day. Then you start to feel overwhelmed. Your self-esteem starts to drop, the confidence drops, and it has the opposite effect of what you're hoping that's going to do. So, when you feel and I think all sorts of things can happen. You don't have you just don't feel like you can make decisions as well. Or you might not start coping at work as well as you did. And you're sort of on under this constant struggle of just trying to suppress your feelings and put up a facade, I think, to protect yourself. But that's the bit that, as you quite rightly said, Kieran, is the bit that you kind of thought, you know what, done with this.
Would you say that the ego appearing is like one of the early signs of that you might be struggling with something as a man, where you're trying to cover it over?
Well, I think if you're starting to feel defensive, I do. I think if you're starting to feel defensive, or that you might be judged, or afraid of what people might think or say of what's going on in your life, that's all ego.
Yeah.
That's all ego, it's a sense of, it could even be a sense of guilt, self-blame. It could just be worrying. And all of that is like a voice in your head, isn't it? Like a thought pattern that's telling you what you should or shouldn't do all the time. And you're trying to keep up with what you think is the right thing to do whilst feeling contrary to that, whilst feeling in pain or hurting or struggling to sleep or, overworking. It can come out in people in different ways, and so
that's great advice, because certainly, like you said earlier, it's a great quote like trying to live normal when nothing is normal.
Yeah, nothing's normal, and it's getting harder, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What signs and symptoms almost that should partners look out for in their husbands, boyfriends, whatever, you know, if that might indicate that something isn't right?
I think I would say things, there's the variety, I think, but people can start to withdraw or become depressed, feel like, you know, maybe they'd be sort of going to the gym excessively, over DIY. I think when as human beings, obviously, we like to feel safe and in control and on the inside. And when we don't, we seem to project that onto the outside of us. So we start doing more things to try to compensate, like we can fix this, but we can't fix this on the inside. So it sends us into a bit of a spin. So it could be overworking. It could be over-exercising, doing DIY too much. And then now you're trying to not only juggle your job, you're trying to, you know, you're doing more extra hours just to take your mind off of, you know, using it as a distraction. So even though, so I'm going to sort of contradict myself here, even though a distraction is like the number one coping mechanism, you just got to look out for, okay, hold on a minute. Now we don't see each other and you're completely withdrawn and we don't talk, or if we talk, you're snapping. You know, I suppose over-exercising, overeating, over-drinking or things like that, you know, is what I would say.
That's really, really good advice. Thank you.
You pretty much just described everything I did.
Okay.
especially the drinking side. Like, it was just the coping.
Of course. It's a crutch, isn't it? It's all it is. And, but they're it's being alert to that. And often I think, you know, partners can say to, you know, like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Just, are you okay? Because there could be a worry about, you know, do I say anything? Don't I say anything? I mean, there's so much restriction and control over, especially if you're going through fertility treatment, you know, watch your body, watch what you eat, look after yourself, all the rest of it. It impacts on your relationship, doesn't it? There's so many restrictions that, you know, that you're squeezed so tight as a couple. That there are releases in as much as food and drink, and then you start to sort of feel like you're spiraling, and then you feel bad because you might have, you know, you're not following the routine or the regime or whatever it is. You know, there's so many things that impacts on it. But I think being able to say to each other, really, are you okay? Are you okay? You know, you seem very sad or stressed or distant, or I don't see you.
There's often there's a bit of a cliche, but it's like ask twice, because often, yes. Are you okay? It's very English. About, yeah, I'm fine. But
yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
But almost don't just ask twice, but put some meat on the bones and say why. Like you just mentioned there, give list a few reasons why you're asking that, and then hopefully it'll then kind of open a conversation rather than. Because are you okay is a closed question. It can be a yes or no answer. So try and ask it in a different way if you're not eliciting an appropriate response. Not to say it's not getting
you
the response
could say,
you want.
You could say, you know, as an open question, I think I can see you struggling. How can I help? You know, how can I help? There's another little, just a little thing, really. It's just a little thing. But, you know, as couples I talk to and say, you could have like a code or a safe word between you. You know, like if either of you is really struggling, just come up with this really silly, funny word that you both use. If you're sort of feeling like you're on the floor, or you've had a bad day, or something's happened, or, you know, you've had, a trigger, somebody said, and actually, you know, you can start sort of a dialogue between you that it starts to get a bit heated and you don't know what you're even talking about or where you're going with this. But if you say this one word to each other, it means, actually, you know, I don't want to get into all of this. I'm just hurting. And this word means it's everything that's going on for us right now is very challenging and it's hurting us. And this is the word. You come out with that word and it just cuts through all the dialogue. It's like, okay. And then add to that, if I ever say this word to you or you to me, what do we both of us need in that moment? Is it space? Is it a hug? Is it a cup? Or is it a walk? What is it that we need? in that moment if we say that word, and it can just really help. Like, I find anyway that it can help people.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you.
We used to, we had one of those for social situations. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of like when we were going through everything. So if one of us was struggling, we'd turn to the other and go, oh, I'm tired. And it was just kind of like if we were out in public,
I love that.
It sounds, yes. I'm tired. And then
yes.
I used to say it quite a bit. Surprisingly, it was me that was like, I need to get out of here. I need to get out.
I love that code. You see, you've got your own code going there. Yes.
And we'd just wind up what we were doing and make a polite exit, you know.
Perfect.
It's a great bit of advice. It's a great bit of advice. But I think we actually did it just not unconsciously, but we kind of naturally fell into it. Like it was just something we had a very brief chat about. And I used to say it all the time. So Jen was trying to get me to stop it. Like, I'm tired.
You were always saying, so I'm tired. You just arrived and you're saying, I'm tired. I want to go.
We're going to go to my parents this week. I'm tired.
Good one. I love it.
But it was like my default. So we decided to use it as actually a form of communication. And now if I say it, she just ignores me.
Oh, that old chestnut. But you see, reviewing and managing your feelings, you know, whether it's day to day, weekend to weekend, when you're going through this, when you're going through the raw grief of this, you know, stopping to take stock, you know, lots of people rush back to work. If something like this happens, something tragic like this, they go on autopilot and go back to work. Now, for some people, that might work. And then all of a sudden they crash and it's like, oh, God, you know, I should have taken some time off. There's no right or wrong. I'm not saying there's right or wrong, because we all cope as human beings as we have to cope. And in couples, people can cope differently, clearly. But I think it can be helpful if you can, because not all companies are agreeable, to just take some time off. Just give yourself time to breathe, even if it, and you know, in that raw grief, don't rush back. If you have got a good line manager or boss, you know, can you talk to them confidentially? I underline that because not everybody, you know, just make sure it is confidential if you don't want to talk further at that time. You know, to other people, if they're asking, you just say, oh, I've just been through something very upsetting. You don't need to elaborate until you're ready to elaborate, you know.
That's really good advice. Thank you. And like, to kind of, like I mentioned earlier that, you know, men are often discarded in this conversation. They're asked how their other half is doing. But naturally, men will want to support and help their other half through this as well. So what kind of things can they do to help their female partner through a miscarriage?
Mm-hmm. I think, firstly, I want to say being there is enough. Being there, like, because I think most men will go into like a bit of a panic, really. They can't bear to see their partner distressed. They can't fix it. And there's like a meltdown on the inside. There is sometimes, like an inner torment about, you know, why this has happened. When people can't find the answers to why this is happening to them, they turn it inside on them. Like there's a lot of self-blame going on with men and women. And that's the real sadness of that. But that kind of guilt, self-blame thing is part of grief. So understanding that's part of the grieving process and it's quite normal. It's a rotten part of it, but to just recognize that. So I think being there first and foremost is like understanding each other's coping mechanism, being there just supportive in as much as just being there is supportive. So don't disappear completely off the radar, you know. Obviously hugs, you know, through the tears and through your own tears is what I want to say, through your own tears as well, cry together, talk together, as much or as little as you feel comfortable with, both of you. So there may be a balance there between as much or as little as you feel comfortable with. And then also in the background, practically helping. So I think sometimes that practical help in the background is good. So if your partner, you know, is wanting to sleep or just is going back to work and on autopilot, it's like, what can you do in the background practically to help? I think can be a good one. That's if you're up to it, you know, if you feel
Yeah, no, of course, because, you know, that's sometimes it can be physically very hard on females as well. So, yeah, it's relieving that burden any way you can. And, and we've talked about some of the ways that, that men can find that support and talk and open up and like the kind of early steps. But also, you know, there's a that might be 1 hour a week or something. What can they do themselves in the background to really start? I hesitate to use the word healing because you may, you know, it's something that may always remain there, like Kira mentioned, but to start to move forward.
To start to move forward. Well, I think it's for miscarriage, you know, it's so distressing and it's traumatic. And often you will keep on probably at work trying to just carry on, as I said before, like normal, but it would be far much, it would be far easier for you if you recognize that when you think about somebody else who's been bereaved, you would not expect them to work at full capacity in no way. So you might, you know, afford yourself that same grace, which is, okay, let me see what I can delegate. Could I maybe work from home? What are the other options so that I give myself some space if it's not time off? You know, how can people support me more at work when I'm going through this tough time? If I can't talk about it, I don't want to, it's fine. You know, do I need to talk to my GP? Do I need some time off? Can I go back on a phase return, depending on how you feel? Because, and you know, what I want to say is just, it is important so that you don't just soldier on in a wounded kind of way. And then it just becomes overwhelming. And you can't carry it all on your own. You're not meant to. You're not alone. You don't need to be alone. There is a lot of support for you, for everyone listening to this. There's a lot of support out here, out there, and having somebody to empathize with just can be a great comfort. So there's different ways of trying to access that support, I think. Yeah. You've got to start with you, though, haven't you? You've got to start with you. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it all starts with you, doesn't it? I always say that if I'm not running or functioning as well as I should be, I can't help the people in my life, you know, that need me, really need me.
It's like the aeroplane thing. You've got to put your own gas mask on first.
Yeah. 100%. And it really is true. And I think as you go through life, you realize just how important you are. You are number one in your world. Otherwise, you can't look after everyone else. And something that you mentioned right back when Sean asked that question is, like, don't underestimate how important a hug is. Physical contact is tremendously important. And it's something that I still now, if I'm having a bad day, all I want is a hug from Jen. Like a solid, like, yeah, come here. And it just relaxes me. You know, we're supposed to touch. We're supposed to have that physical contact. We are social animals. I think that often men forget that. You know, that's society has built this kind of, you must stand alone. No, take the hug. Take it from a mate. I hug my friends, like when I'm stressed. Yes. Like, come here, I need a hug. You know, it's a powerful thing.
It's so important, isn't it? And it's so uplifting. It's extremely comforting. And it says, I've got you, you know. I understand. I'm here. That's all you need.
Yeah.
You're just saying we're in it together, actually. A hug is we're in it together.
Yeah. And I remember, like, there's moments where we have a hug and I thought to myself at the moment, I didn't think it. I felt it. At that moment in time, Jen's got me. Like, she's looking after me. I'm not looking after her. She's got me. Yes. And that was incredibly important because the ego, you know, everything else was trying to hold me up. And actually, every now and then I just relaxed when that hug was on, and it was so, so important. So hug, talk and hug.
That's it. Talk and hug. I think that kind of sums it up pretty well, you know. And it just, you know, just it takes a lot of strength to reach out, but actually that is a strength, I think, of a man to say, do you know what? I need to talk about this. I need a bit of help. And that takes guts to do that.
Yeah. Mm.
It does. It really does. Like, you know, we talk about strength and male, being a man, real strength is saying, do you know what? I need some help here. You cannot, I just don't see how any way you can be stronger than that.
No, I don't know how you're supposed to cope going through the trauma of, you know, baby loss, recurrent miscarriage, failed fertility attempts. I think it is being much more highlighted today than it was, that it is related to trauma. Both, you know, going through infertility, loss, fertility treatment. It doesn't have to be fertility treatment around it, obviously, but all of that and the challenge of, you know, trying to fulfill your dream to have a child or children and be a family is extremely difficult and testing, and is likened in many, many cases to trauma. So why would you want to suffer that alone?
Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah, no, amazing. Like, we've covered so many things there, and kind of, we always like to end by asking for what would your one piece of advice be for any men that are experiencing infertility, or in this case, miscarriage. And, you know, even if it's because we've covered so much, you might have to kind of just find something you've already said.
You're not alone. Don't suffer in silence. It's nobody's fault. It's nobody's fault. So, you know, do what makes... So that's too much now, isn't it?
No, not at all.
I would want you to think about what makes you feel more peaceful individually and together, and talk about that and start to put that in place. Yeah.
That's amazing. Amazing advice.
Thank you.
It sums up the thing that we've pretty much talked about, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a sentence. Thank you so much for coming on, Jackie. We've really appreciated having you on, and I know our listeners will get so much out of this conversation. I think, like with many topics that we talk about, we've kind of brushed the surface, haven't we? We could do a whole season on dealing with grief and miscarriage loss and everything else. That comes with it.
That's absolutely true. There's so many different areas that you could talk about, and we could go on. But it's a real privilege to be on. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
That's all right.
Well, very grateful for you sharing as well.
Oh, that's I wouldn't say we've become accustomed to it, but we're enjoying sharing our experiences now because we know it's helping so many others.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for the recognition of that.
Mm.
If guys out there want to contact you, or partners, couples want to contact you, how do they go about that?
I mean, I can provide my email address or my phone number if they want to contact.
Just go email.
Obviously, if they are, you know, if they are having fertility treatment, with a clinic, and I'm one of the independent counsellors that work with them, they can get hold of me through that. But I think in the first instance, email would probably be best. So it's jackie.stewart, 222@btinternet.com.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much.
Like the racing driver.
Jackie Stewart. Yeah, I know. When I sent out the invite for this, I was like, oh, yeah, Jackie Stewart.
Everyone's going to come on and go, oh, no, it's not him. Not to worry.
So, buddy, if people wanted to get hold of us, how do they do that via Instagram?
So Instagram is at the Male Fertility Podcast, or we have our email, which is...
the Male Fertility Podcast @gmail.com. I always go... mind blank, you know, at that moment. Anyway, fantastic to have you on, Jackie. Thank you so much. And I hope we can have you on again in the future to cover another topic as important as this one.
I completely echo that. Like I said at the very outset, you were transformative for both myself and Kieran with the help and guidance you gave us. And I know that you will now be, for anyone who listens to this, it's been brilliant. Thank you.
It's very kind of you both. I really appreciate it. And it's a privilege to be on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Speak soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.